Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the That's Hockey Talk podcast, episode 7, I believe, coming to you on a Monday morning after a big-time, event-filled weekend. Gorm's here, AQ Shipley here, Bailey on the ones and twos, myself, obviously, Nick Marotto. Question for you guys, why did the NHL decide to schedule one playoff game during arguably the biggest golf event of the year, and then nothing the rest of the day until arguably the biggest TV event of the year, Game of Thrones, that night when they had essentially three games going on during that time? What is going on?
I don't get it. I don't like it. Who in their right mind does not watch Tiger win the Masters? Who doesn't do it? You are not a human to me if you don't do it.
I had to flip back and forth. I was watching both, obviously. I invest a lot of time in the Penguins, so I wasn't going to miss that. But every commercial break, every intermission, and I was following along on my computer. I was flipping back over to the Masters. Some guy tweeted at me and was like, not a lot of people can relate to your tweets right now because the Masters are on. I was like, oh, really? Had no idea. Didn't know. No idea. Come on, guys.
Hey, let me ask you both this. What if I talked to you both on Wednesday and said, hey, Tiger Woods is going to win the Masters and the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to be down 3-0 to the Columbus Blue Jackets? Would you guys have said I'm nuts?
I mean, on the second part, for sure. I mean, I've taken Tiger the last 5 years. He's let me down recently, but I'm taking him till he wins, and bam, he wins.
There it was. Big weekend for Tiger. Not a great weekend for Tampa Bay, going down 0-3.
What in the hell,
against
Nick?
The Columbus
Blue? What is going on here?
That was a must-win game, basically, game three for Tampa. And they go into it without Kucherov, who gets suspended for the boarding call in game two, without Hedman, who obviously hasn't looked right and apparently is still lingering an injury, probably came back too early. Listen, Columbus allowed 3 shots in the first period. That's insane to me. If you're Tampa Bay, you're basically, your season, your life is on the line here in this historic run, and you can only muster up 3 shots in the first period of a must-win game. What the hell is wrong with that team? That is one of the most mentally soft, mentally weak teams I've ever seen. Matt Duchene, hats off to him. He's been lighting up the series, 5 points in the 3 games. Ryan Callahan for Tampa, who gets in for Kucherov, who's suspended, comes in, takes a dumb penalty. I think it was a major, and then that basically just was the game down the toilet for Tampa.
Let's give some props to Bobrovsky, though.
Incredible, yeah. Incredible game. And at one point this season, he was asked to stay home by the team. They said, please don't show up anymore. You're a distraction to the team. You're fucking everything up. Just stay home. It looked like he was going to get traded. Now here he is just making those incredible saves. AQ, you were going to say something?
Yeah, how about Steven Stamkos? 0 shots on goal yesterday. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me that you're the – especially with Kucherov out of the lineup, you're the firepower, you're the horse on the team, and you take 0 shots.
And Tampa's power play is not bailing them out. Dumb penalties and lack of effort, that's what it boils down to me, and mentally weak.
Columbus, 4-for-8 on the power play, 4-for-8 on power play goals of the series. Tampa Bay, 0 power play goals. Stamkos, Kucherov, Braden Point, Tyler Johnson, 0 points in this series.
Absolutely insane.
What? And by the way, first time Tampa Bay all year has dropped 3 straight games. All year. The President's Cup trophy winners. President's Trophy winners, rather.
We talked about it. We said, can they handle the adversity? They haven't really had to deal with any adversity all season. They came with a few come-from-behind wins. But this is real, genuine problems for them. And they have folded like a lawn chair. They just look weak. The coach is calling it a 5-alarm fire in the media, which I guess is a tactic to motivate the guys. But that seemed like the wrong message to send.
It did. When he said that, I went, uh-oh, don't go there.
Yeah,
don't go there.
AQ, as a professional athlete, your coach says something like that to the media, what are you thinking in your head?
You have to, I mean, it becomes a point where, and I've been on teams where this has happened, and it becomes a point where you gotta have guys in that locker room where you look around and you say, fuck everybody. It comes down to the guys in this room, plain and simple. And you play for the guy to the left, you play for the guy to the right. And that's what it's got to come down to. And it doesn't seem like they're doing that. At the end of the day, they were the best team in the regular season, and they're coming out and they're laying a goose egg. Like, You have to put up more of an effort for your brothers, plain and simple.
Yeah.
Forget everybody else. Forget the coaches. Forget the front office. You got to play for yourselves at this point.
And if anything, it seems like Columbus is the team that's doing that. It seems like John Torella, who has been oddly quiet, maybe because of the team's success here, but he's usually the guy lighting a fire under people's asses, chewing people out in the media. He's been relatively quiet, no real good sound bites, nothing crazy coming out of towards his mouth. Columbus is rolling right now.
Best way to eat crow is eat it while it's hot. Columbus, I said you guys wouldn't make it into the playoffs. Torts, I had you riding out of town on a rail, getting fired. Look who's right. Look who's who's wrong. I am eating my crow and eating it while it's hot, Columbus. What a surprise you have been. Series not over yet, but I've buried you for a while, and I'm going to continue to bury you in the second round if you make it that far. But hats off to you, Columbus. Save the hate mail. You are an impressive group right now this time of year.
And you said it, with as good as this team's been, series not over yet, you keep kind of holding out hope in the sense that, like, okay, you don't want to bury them yet because as good as the Lightning has been, maybe there's a chance they come back. Teams that lead a best of seven series 3-0 have a record of 186-4. Only been come back from down 3-0 four times in the history of the league. I don't see it happening here. Columbus, congrats.
Yeah, they're just playing hot. They're on a hot rail right now. Hey, with all those late season acquisitions that they got, who looks like an idiot now? Me, right here.
We all said it.
Because I said, you put all your chips in the pot and you better do something this playoff series, and they're doing it.
Moving on to the other series in the East that has been a complete dumpster fire for us here personally, Pittsburgh and the Islanders. Another one to me that boils down to dumb penalties and poor effort. It's been rinse, wash, and repeat all three games. The Isles have dominated and dictated the play in every single game this series, and all the Penguins have done have been responding with dumb penalties and even dumber mistakes. The best fourth line in hockey was Cizikas, Clutterbuck, and Martin has been having their way with the Pens, regardless of who's on the ice, especially Crosby's line. They've been owning Crosby's line. Jordan Eberle has been an offensive catalyst for the Islanders. Timely scoring. He scored not even a minute after the Penguins opened the scoring in Game 3 on Sunday. The Penguins have had the lead in this series twice for a combined 3 minutes and 17 seconds. They're not getting offense from their stars. They're not getting offense from the secondary guys. The power play isn't bailing them out. They've been bad at pinching on the defensive side. Jack Johnson looked like he was drunk in Game 2. Those penalties he took, that was mind-blowing to me. Coming out of the box after taking a penalty, comes across, trips over a guy, then just blatantly checks a guy where the puck is nowhere even close for another interference call. Every time they enter the zone, it seems like it's a 3-on-4 or a 2-on-3. They're lacking the numbers, the puck support. Everything has gone wrong for Pittsburgh. AQ, what is going on?
Yeah, I think my biggest issue, and this is first, let me say the Islanders are doing a fantastic job. I mean, the hats off to Barry Trotz. He has put together an unbelievable game plan, making sure his guys back check, get back on defense. And it seems like Pittsburgh's entering the zone always outnumbered, or the Islanders are going the other way with numbers. So he's got a fantastic game plan, and he's playing physical, which we all know Pittsburgh does not like. But I think one of the biggest issues that I have yesterday is I heard Sullivan's comments after the game, and he's talking about, well, you know, this is why the Islanders have had success. This is their style of play. They get back in the neutral zone. They're defensive-minded. They're not very high risk. And then, you know, that's not our style. We're very high risk. Well, fuck, change your game plan. It ain't working. Shit. Like, I've never seen anything like that. As a coach, your job is to change the game plan when things don't work. Instead of just being like, oh, well, we're high risk, we're just keep getting our fucking asses beat, let's keep it rolling.
That's an incredible point, and it's reminiscent of what ended up happening with Dan Bylsma and the Penguins, in the sense that they would not adjust. They kept trying to play their game, and when you keep doing that, if your game isn't working anymore, that's great, you want to stick to your game plan, but if it's patent and proven not working anymore, you need to make adjustments and something needs
let's
to change.
Let's go to Sid the Kid, guys, because last time we talked, you guys were both burying one of the greatest hockey players of all time, Sid the Kid, up to this point in the series.
I mean, he's obviously struggling. He's not played as well as we expected. Game one, I took some harsh shots at him. He deserved it. Game two and game three, he's played better. Like, you can see the efforts there, and he's attempting. He's driving the net a little bit more, but he has no help, and he's literally got two guys on him every shift. I mean, the Islanders are executing perfectly, and the Penguins are not. When you really boil it down, that's what it is. The Islanders are executing their game plan to a T, and Pittsburgh has no answer for it, and their game plan is not effective.
Thank agreed.
You. Your thoughts on Sid?
I didn't watch yesterday at all. I go. Let's go back to the superstitious thing.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm the fucking problem. Maybe I'm. You know, I'm not gonna watch today. I'm gonna watch the greatest golfer of all time just stick it to the world, which he did. And then I let Brandel Chamblee know about it, and he blocked me on Twitter. Thanks, Brandel.
He blocked you.
Thank you. Getting blocked.
Yeah, I'm a little fired up this morning because I went from like real high emotion to piss poor emotion yesterday. Because then I turn on the Penguin game, I see they freaking lost again, and I'm like, ah, God, here we go again.
That's like, I was mad at Sully because he throws Dominic Simone up on line one. And if you're not a Penguins fan, or in fall of the season, Simone, he scored like one goal in like 30 games. He's a playmaker. He's not a scorer. And then I'm thinking, okay, they're trying to get Sid going. A lot of people think of this in the reverse. They're trying to get Sid going, so they put a guy on his line who can't score. It's not about Sid feeding that guy. It's almost a sense of, like, we know Sid is comfortable playing with that guy. It's been in the media. It's been reported. We know Sid likes playing with him. So it's trying to get Sid comfortable and get him going in a sense of making him feel good and him feel confident, not so much setting up a sniper on the wing, more so feeding pucks to him. It just hasn't worked. They're out of answers. They're running out of time. If they don't come out in this next game and do something drastic and magical, they're going home. And by all accounts, and by all, I mean, you've watched the games, you can see it yourself, they don't look like a team that has any answers. Another team that might be out of answers, San Jose. Oof. They came out in game one and absolutely pounded Vegas, and ever since, it has been the Golden Knights show. Game two, Vegas comes out and they pump in three goals in the first 10 minutes or so of the game. The Sharks pull Martin Jones and come back and tie that up 3-3, all in the first period. Absolutely insane. Then a power play goal from Stone and a shorty from Wild Bill Carlson put them away. So then we go to last night, another high-scoring game with an early start. Mark Stone, the deadline acquisition, we talked about it at length. He was the best guy in the market. They went ahead and get him. He gets his first hat trick after scoring 16 seconds into
ever
the game.
Ever in the NHL, his
insane
first hat trick.
How in a playoff that? Game. That's what you want, though. You need guys to step up and take it over the top at this time of year, and that's what Stone's doing. Not to mention, he's arguably the best defensive player on their team. Evander Kane and Ryan Reeves get into a scrap, and as tough as Kane is, he's named after Evander Holyfield. He's been boxing his whole life. Reeves is that guy, and he's one of the biggest guys in the league, and that was a tough – I mean, he gave it his all, but even still, trying to get the boys going there, Reeves comes out on top. Vegas takes it home. They're up in this series 2-1. AQ, did you get to see any of this game late night?
I watched it, and let me first start off with, if you didn't catch the glow sticks and the atmosphere in Vegas to start this thing off, and then 30 seconds in, they get a goal. That place was rocking. It's got to be one of the hardest places to play. They did a fantastic job, and I think what this all comes down to is obviously San Jose has talent offensively, defensively. We've all talked about it. The thing that's killing them is poor goaltending. We spoke about this earlier. Martin Jones is absolutely killing them. Absolutely killing them.
And that's rough because he came in and he was arguably a savior for them last year. He comes in, they get him off the trade, and he puts up these incredible numbers, and they look like a force to be reckoned with early in the year, even despite him. And then we knew it would catch up and bite them in the ass, and here it is. You look at what the Golden Knights have done, the second team in NHL history to score a goal in the first minute of each period in a playoff game.
Nice.
The line of Pacioretty, Stastny, and Stone, all guys they acquired this season after losing in the finals last year, looks unstoppable. 6 points for Pacioretty, 8 points for Stone and Stastny, a piece in this series. They are an offensive powerhouse. And then Jumbo Joe Thornton goes out and he throws a little shoulder into Nosek in the head, and he gets a minor, and there was some talk of maybe he might be worth a little bit more. I don't know. Seems like they settled it on the ice there, but if Joe Thornton's getting frustrated and going out and knocking guys in the head, you know you got a problem. Gorms, what's going on in your mind in this series?
Vegas, all go big. The incredible streak continues with them is all I'm saying. And like AQ said, you ain't going to win in Vegas, man. I'm sorry. It is over. They have something going on cooking there. Obviously, what Stoney did, I mean, huge for that locker room. Plus, he's a veteran. Plus, he's going to be there for a few years. He's like, you know, all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah, he's all in.
That's what I'm saying. He's like a face of the franchise now, and he's been there for 3 weeks. So I just liked what they're rolling right now. They got a lot of gas in the tank. Go.
And that, you guys mentioned it, the environment there is next level. And we've seen that a lot. Nassau Coliseum, the Islanders fans were insane. Pittsburgh tried to show up, the Pittsburgh fans, but they didn't have much to cheer for because the crowd or the team on the ice has looked like dog shit. St. Louis and Winnipeg, this series, another one with these, home atmospheres, but it seems like the road team is dominating every time they play. And the Blues are up 2-1 after two road wins, dropped game three last night at home. The good news for the Jets fans is Line A seems to be back after a subpar regular season. He's got a goal in each of the three games. Winnipeg, though, now 3-0-0 at the Enterprise Center this season. With the two regular season wins, they've outscored St. Louis 19-8 in their building. Can the road trend continue? Can Winnipeg get another road win and even the series up at 2-2?
Yes, and those first two games are one-goal games, and then the blowout with Winnipeg. Yeah, I think this thing's going seven personally. And Winnipeg, you just keep doing what you're doing, flipping and flopping, getting wins on the road, getting wins on home. Let's go, boys.
I think I called St. Louis in six. I'm sticking with it. I think St. Louis gets this one. Winnipeg might get the next one. Goes back to St. Louis, and bam, we see St. Louis moving on.
I'm with you there. I agree. I think St. Louis is going to pull out one of these next two, whether it be at home or
on the
road. Watch
out, boys. That's all I'm saying. You heard me a couple days ago. Watch out.
You've been high on Winnipeg for a while now, and I love them personally. I like all their players, but just something about Hellebuck hasn't been the same this year and how hot Bennington has been. We will see. There's just something now about the young – look what Matt Murray did 2 years ago with the Penguins, the rookie goaltender in the playoffs. If you can capture some lightning in a bottle there, they can make a run. But let's talk about now the games that are kicking off tonight for their game threes and talk a little bit about those series. Washington and Carolina. This series has been some excellent hockey, and it's what we talked about so far. Washington is up 2-0. But what we talked about, there being two Washingtons, the Washington of last year and the ghosts of years past with the Capitals. And so far, it's been the Capitals of last year where they've gotten out to leads and they've blown those leads. Carolina's had some late game comebacks, but Washington is finding a way to win. They're not completely melting down and pissing these games away. Game two, Brooks Orpik, of all people, gets the OT game winner.
Two goals in the regular season for Orpik.
Two goals in the regular season. This is actually his second playoff overtime winner with four career playoff goals. Player of the series to me so far has been Nick Backstrom. When I see Nick Backstrom in a slot going down to his knees blocking shots, like, that guy is known to not be a physical player, to be an offensive player, a playmaker. When he's blocking shots, you know they're all in. Three goals for him in the four games in this series. Carolina needs to score first. It's very obvious. They're getting started too late in these games. They're trying to climb back in, but Washington is too resilient. Carolina needs to score first, put the pressure on them. Plus, that building in Carolina is going to be,
it'll be
raucous
nuts
and rowdy.
It'll be nuts.
They tailgate like NASCAR fans, like football fans for these hockey games.
You got them
games.
Tying it up in Carolina.
I don't know. I really don't know. I said this series would go seven. I thought it would be played out a little bit, but Washington, like I said, isn't letting Carolina back into these games in terms of the series. They're letting them back into the individual games, but they're closing them out still. They're winning. So I really don't know. I hope, for the sake of watching some more good hockey, that Carolina gets a win at home.
There's a split coming, boys. You heard it here. There's a split coming in these next two games, and then it's over after that. These guys are in an unfamiliar place. Again, I call it the playoffs. They haven't been in a while. Washington's holding the cup. I like a five-gamer.
Yeah, I don't like Carolina at all. I mean, I think them getting down 0-2 and then coming back home, yeah, it might bring some energy, but you just look at it on paper. I mean, offensively, Washington just has so much more talent and so many more options. And if they get Holtby playing, you know, the way he can play, I mean, it's lights out for them. And not to mention, Washington has to be looking around the East like, oh my God, we got a pretty easy pass right to the Cup Finals again. I mean, this is setting up really nice for them. And they just keep doing what they're doing. They might have a nice, easy ride right back to the finals.
Yeah, we always say, and you'll hear players say cliches and say they're not looking around what other teams are doing, but AQ, you just said it. That has to be true. They have to be looking around and seeing what's going on with Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay and realizing, boys, we have an opportunity here. Let's not take our foot off the gas. Let's step on the throat.
Absolutely.
Going ahead to the other game kicking off tonight, Preds and Stars, game three. This one to me is, this whole series has been who's going to blink first. Mm-hmm. It's like this defensive showdown, this battle of the wills. Preds got the OT win in game two to even the series at 1-1. The Stars are the big-time defensive unit, but they still have loads of high-end offensive talent. But they're going 0-for-6 on the power play, and they only offered up 23 shots in game two. So to me, the Preds had 43 shots, but also went 0-for-3 on the power play, and their woes continue. It's like, who is going to blink first, and who can find the back of the net? Like, what's it going to take for these guys to score some goals? It's insane.
If you're a Preds fan, be very wary right now. This is a tough place they're going into. Obviously, they split in the first two games in Nashville. This is a scary place to play. And Nashville, I know what you guys are doing, okay? I mean, I understand what you're doing, Laviolette. But they're playing timid to me, and I don't like a team like that that's powerful. They're playing timid and not wanting to make mistakes. Obviously, their power play sucked during the regular season. I just don't like the timid factor with Laviolette getting out there. That's what they look like to me on paper or on TV when I'm watching them. I'm a little nervous about this one if I'm a Preds fan.
I think we thought this game was going to come down to special teams. Well, shit, those special teams have sucked. So it's literally become a goaltending battle. And you're right, who's going to blink first? And Dallas, I think, has the upper hand moving forward in this. Coming back to Dallas now, they get the split that they wanted on the road, absolutely. And now it comes back to Dallas. And moving forward, again, I think it comes down to the goaltending. And neither of them have records of being fantastic goalies in the playoffs. So it's like, you're right, who's going to blink first? And I think this is going to be the one matchup we're going to watch. I said it was going to go seven. I said it was going to go to Dallas. I'm still sticking with it.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it in a vacuum here, it's obviously trending Dallas's way. They get the split on the road. They're going back home. Even though they lose game two in OT, they still have, I feel like, the momentum going back home and a really good chance to put a stranglehold on the series. Another OT win in a series, the Colorado Avalanche even it up at 1-1 with the Calgary Flames. Nathan MacKinnon with an absolute laser in overtime. The good news for Calgary here, though, yeah, I know you dropped the split at home, so it's 1-1, but Mike Smith has played outstanding. He looks like a guy poised to make a run, so you can hang your hat on that, at least, if you're a Calgary fan. Okay, we lose, we're even, we should be up 2-0, but Mike Smith is playing well. You're going back to Colorado. I think they're going to get a split in Colorado. I think they're going to be in good shape here.
I'm with you on that.
Calgary, 8-0-1 in the past 9 home games against Colorado, including the playoffs. So, again, I think they're fine. I think we didn't expect this series to be a sweep. We expected Colorado to put up a good fight, but I think Calgary's still rolling.
I'm with you on that. Hot team all year, Calgary, and hot team late in the season, Colorado. That's the ones you got to be leery of, but I'm with you, Nick. Too much on Calgary. I like them to win this series. And who the heck knows? Do we get another split?
Could be. The big news out of Colorado, they signed the kid from the college kid.
Throwing him right in the lineup,
yeah,
aren't they?
And they're throwing him right in the lineup, which is very interesting to me. Sometimes you see that late in the season in the league. Rarely ever do you see it right in the playoffs. Only a few guys are able to do it. I think Chris Kreider did it a few years ago with the Rangers, so we'll see how he fits into the lineup. All right, here we go. The other series, last series tonight, the Bruins and the Leafs.
All right, Nick, let me just stop you for a second. If you like UFC fights, if you like MMA, if you like the combative man-on-man, knuckle-to-knuckle, then watch this game tonight because it got ugly in the last game in the second and third period. So this will be a Donnybrook tonight.
What you're referencing, of course, the whole incident with Nazem Kadri, who has been a pretty good offensive player for the Leafs. He goes ahead. He makes it. The game is 3-0 Bruins, game two on Sunday. He finally gets on the board for the Leafs. It's 3-1. He took a knee-on-knee from Jake DeBrusk, and then I missed it, but someone hit Patty Marleau pretty hard into the turnbuckle against the boards. It might have been DeBrusk. Kadri didn't like it. He comes back, and he puts literally lays the lumber into DeBrusk's head. Like, just the most blatant cross-check to the head I've ever seen. He's got a hearing with the NHL Department of Player Safety today. He's going to get suspended. The only question is how long. How long will he miss in this series? This happened last year, if you remember, in the series against the Bruins. He boarded a guy, basically with his ass, drove the dude's head into the boards. Ugly hit. Kadri has a propensity to do stuff like this. He plays the game. We always talk about guys playing with an edge or playing on the line. Sometimes he goes over the line. This was an incident of it. Is this going to crush Toronto? Because he's a very good centerman and a very good player for them. Where does it stand now in terms of the Bruins coming back being 1-1? They kind of got dog-walked in game one. We didn't expect that. I don't think, Gorms, you've been high on Toronto. Mm-hmm. But I think everyone else has been on the Bruins. Now the series is tied at 1. They're going back to Toronto, which is going to be one of the playoff atmospheres that could explode. The Leafs fans are next level. The other bad news for Boston is D-man Torrey Krug and Connor Clifton both suffered injuries, had to leave the game. Torrey Krug got fucking train wrecked by Jake Muzzin. He flies in the boards. His helmet flew off. He might have a concussion. It looked bad. It was a clean hit, but it just looked bad for Krug, and you hate to see that happen. So Boston gets the win, but at what cost? When you got guys getting cross-checked in the head and flown into the boards, I don't know if Toronto was trying to send a message like, hey, you're not going to bully us around, but boy, that's taking a toll on both teams. This has just been a physical series.
And how much does that take out of the game plan that they have? Offensively speaking, if they're saying, hey, we're going to switch the narrative of the game plan, we're playing a back alley fight rather than a hockey game. Who, in your opinion, both you guys, gets more out of that? You know what I'm saying? Like, completely
Boston
changing
times
the game.
A thousand.
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
No question. I mean, they took the fight to him in game two, and I mean, it's It was impressive to watch. I mean, you came out of that, and they're like, man, Toronto might not make it to game three. Like, really? I mean, they came out just humming. And I went on record saying Toronto has 0% chance to win this series. Gorms, I know you're high on them.
Mm-hmm.
I still think Boston takes the next couple and walks out of the series, you know, in a five-game series. I mean, I think they're better. I think they're more physical. I think they're more experienced. I think they just walk away with this thing.
There's the beauty of it. What do we know? Who knows? Because everybody in this room said, yeah, Tampa Bay, possible sweep. possible sweep against this downtrodden Columbus team, and look at them now. So, AQ, I'm with you. Who the hell
There's
knows?
A lot of I thinks at this time
right,
of year.
Right.
I thinks go in either direction.
I love it. Just keep this series frisky, and I'll be watching.
Yeah, especially if Austin Matthews can't get on the board here, and Tavares has been relatively quiet. If those guys can't start finding a way to score goals, I think it's going to be a quick and easy win for the Bruins the rest of the way. But all right, here we go. That was the weekend recap.
Can I try some here, Nick?
Yeah, let's go.
I want to throw this in, AQ, and you can chime in if you want, but this is Meraldo's baby. That's Hockey Talk. So I'm going to throw this to you. We're in the playoffs. Each day I'm going to ask you, snipe of the night, who was it?
To me, probably McKinnon. McKinnon's overtime goal over the weekend was just filthy. The way he came into the zone with speed, too, and the pass is even underrated. The pass to spring him back behind the D-man and get in there and just rip one was nasty. Me, you got one? I'm assuming you have one on your
mind. I don't. AQ, how about you?
I'm with you. I mean, I saw that McKinnon snipe coming down the left side and just over the top shoulder, glove side, and man, it was pretty special to watch. I mean, that kid's a special talent.
Guys, keep that fresh in your mind, because each episode on That's Hockey Talk, I'm asking you both, give me your favorite snipe of the night.
I like it, Gorms. Well,
I got one more for you.
Oh, here give we me go. It.
Tiger shot on 16, baby. Let's go.
That was a snipe.
And that's Golf Talk. Just kidding. All right, thanks for rocking with us. As always, subscribe, rate, and review. Tell your friends, share the episode. Thank you guys for listening, and that's Hockey Talk.